these species are not characterized by the markings on the plumage alone, but likewise by the size and form of the bill and other differences. I have stated that in the 13 species of ground finches, a nearly perfect gradation may be traced from a beak extraordinarily thick to one so fine that it may be compared to that of a warbler. I very much suspect that certain members of the series are confined to different islands. Therefore, if the collection had been made on any one island, it would not have presented so perfect a gradation. It is clear that if several islands have each their peculiar species of the same genera, when these are placed together, they will have a wide range of character. But there is not space in this work to enter into this curious subject. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Well, there is space in The Jolly Heretic to enter into this peculiar subject, and that is a subject that we have been talking about a lot on here, the fact that we appear to be coming apart, the fact that Western people appear to be moving towards the extremes, that the middle is hollowed out so that everybody is fighting and everybody is hating each other. And what I want to look at today is how, in terms of biology, that could possibly have happened. Why are we coming apart? Why are we moving towards the extremes? And I think the answer, to put it simply, is that more the extremes can be regarded as autism and schizophrenia, and we are increasingly moving towards those. More and more people are either autistic or schizophrenic, and the middle is therefore reduced in size, and this is helping to explain why we have these extreme differences these days, and also helping to explain why we have some of the more bizarre and extraordinary worldviews which we increasingly have. Now, why is this the case? Well, as you all know, but I'll go through it again to those who are new to the, for those who are new to the channel. Until 1800, yes, we were under harsh conditions of Darwinian selection, which meant that the child mortality rate was about 50%. Every generation, those that were not highly genetically fit were purged from the population. This meant that the only survivors of this were those who were low in mutational load. Those that were higher mutational load, meaning that they had poor immune systems, would die of childhood diseases, things like scarlet fever or whatever it happens to be, and not pass on their genes. The brain, as you all know by now, is about 84% of the genome, meaning it is a massive target for mutation. Meaning that if you have mutation of the body, you will certainly have mutation of the mind. And this means that maladaptive forms of thinking, the problems with the mind, are comorbid with problems of the body. And it has been demonstrated that people that have problems with the mind, things like depression, schizophrenia, autism, whatever it happens to be, those things correlate with minor physical abnormalities, with evidence of mutation of the body. Now, the child mortality rate has collapsed from 50% in 1800 to 1% today. What that would mean would be a massive rise in mutation, a massive rise, therefore, in mutations of the mind, in people thinking in ways that were maladaptive, that would therefore get them killed under conditions of harsh Darwinian selection. What were we selecting for in terms of the nature of the mind under harsh Darwinian selection? Well, one of the things we were selecting for was religiousness. What is the nature of religiousness? A big part of it is that we are pro-social. People who believe in God, that there's a God, a moral God on their shoulder telling them how to behave, are less likely to be cast out by the band, are less likely to be killed, and are more likely to pass on their genes. So religiousness is selected for at an individual level. Religiousness implies that you are pro-social and moral. Females will sexually select for religious men because they'll be less likely to pump and dump. Males will sexually select for religious women because they'll be less likely to cuckold them. And so religiousness will be passed on at the level of sexual selection. In addition, religiousness is tends to take that which is adaptive and make it into the will of God. One of the things that's adaptive is ethnopositive and negative ethnocentrism. It's been shown in computer models that the group that is highest in positive ethnocentrism, that is to say internal cooperation, and negative ethnocentrism, kingdom, that is to say, repelling the invader, is more likely to triumph, so religiousness gets passed on at this level. For this reason, religiousness is associated with health. It's associated with genetic physical health, it's associated with genetic mental health, it's associated with fertility, it's associated with wanting to have children, it's associated with having children, and so on. So that's what we were under selection for. Now, what you would expect with the collapse of child mortality and the collapse of selection down to 1% of child mortality would be a huge tsunami, a huge rise in mutation in all directions, like Darwin's finches, that you would get a much, much, much larger, higher level of diversity. We would become much more diverse in a way, genetically and mentally, in a way that would deviate from that optimum, in a way that would deviate from that healthy centre of being selected basically to be, you know, high in traditional religiousness in the collective worship of a moral god, which has been shown even now to be associated with mental and physical health. And that is what we would see. Now, that one way we can understand that extreme deviation is in terms of schizophrenia and autism. In many ways, these can be understood to be at the opposite end of a spectrum. Autism is the extreme male brain. It is characterized by being very, very high in systematizing, in pure, you know, in logic, in the ability to systematize, but very, very low in empathy. So people that are autistic are brilliant, you know, at seeing the minor details, that sort of thing. But they're very, very bad at empathizing and understanding the nature of people's minds. Now, the other extreme, the extreme female brain, it's been highlighted as, is to be very, very high in empathy, but very, very low in systematizing, to be system blind. Empathy means that you are upset, you are very good at noticing the external manifestations of internal states, and you are very, very interested in them, but you are illogical, you are system blind. Now, taken to its extreme, what you have is hyper-empathy. That is to say, people that are so sensitive to external signals of internal states that they misread them. So perceive it, you know, someone smiling at you means that they must be in love with you. Someone frowning at you means they must want to kill you. That is hyper-empathy, and that makes you paranoid. And that is the essence of schizophrenia. That is what schizophrenia in part is. It's hyper-empathy. And so that is unhealthy, and it's a sign of mutation and of mental illness. You know, just as autism is. Now, of course, what that means is that you see evidence of a mind everywhere, even in the nature of the world itself. And this makes you, of course, religious. This is part of why autistic people tend not to believe in God. They do not see a mind behind the world itself. They simply see a mechanical world. Whereas schizophrenics tend to be very, very strongly religious because they see evidence of a God everywhere. They see evidence of a sense of agency everywhere, even in the nature of the world itself. And taken to an even further extreme, they become paranoid about conspiracies and whatever. So these are the two extremes. And so what you would expect, if there was a massive build-up in mutational load, is for people to be pushed more and more either towards being autistic on the one hand and schizophrenic on the other. And I will look in a minute at the kind of world views that would result in and what we are seeing today. But first of all, it's worth looking in a bit more detail in how this might have happened. Now, biologically, what would have happened is there will be changes for genetic reasons due to mutation in the nature of the brain. Now, research indicates that we can divide between two hemispheres in the human brain. The left brain, which is focused on language, it is rational, and it tends to see things in isolation, which is what science does, of course. Science will tend to break up the chaos that is reality and break it up into manageable chunks, and in that sense perceive things in isolation. This in many ways is therefore the male brain. It is not interested in feelings, it is low in empathy, and for reasons we'll look at in a minute, if you are very, very left-brained, then you will be high in a propensity towards depression. The right brain is images. The right brain is female. The right brain is holistic. The right brain tends to make sense of the whole. The right brain is more sort of artistic. Now, these are stereotypes, of course, but there is good evidence that these would appear to be the case. So the right brain is more about feelings. Now, together, these two hemispheres make sense of things. Now, what this means is if the left brain is damaged, if the left brain has developed suboptimally, the left hemisphere, then you tend to be illogical, you tend to be bad at rationality, and indeed, you tend to be prone to schizophrenia. Because, of course, schizophrenia involves a complete lack or is the opposite of autism. It involves a lack of the ability to sort of make sense of things, but it involves this hole and this focus on feeling and this focus on agent behind events. If the right brain is damaged, if the right hemisphere is damaged, then you will tend to be autistic and you will be hyper focused, and you will also be prone to depression, because a part of what depression is about is insight. So you have too much insight, and if you have too much insight and you're constantly thinking about things and trying to make sense of things, then you will start worrying and you will become anxious and you will become depressed, and there will be no ability to take that and make sense of it into a holistic whole where there might be some person behind the world that gives meaning to the world and tells you that everything will be okay in the end, you know, some god that will tell you that it will all be okay and there's no need to be depressed. And so therefore, having damage to the right side of the brain and being autistic is associated with depression. So that is how, biologically, this change could have taken place. You would have rising mutational load, which would mean there would be just more and more people that would have either an extreme left dominant brain or an extreme biased right dominant brain. Now, the evidence is that the larger the brain is, the more interconnected the two hemispheres, or the less connected rather, but the more separate the two hemispheres are. They are connected together, but they are more separate. Now, the thing that connects them together partly is the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is a newer part of the brain, a more evolved part of the brain. It's higher up. The frontal lobe is 7% in dogs, it is 17% in apes, and it is 35% in humans. Now, what that means is that we have these two hemispheres that are doing different jobs, basically, and this allows us, and they are separated, although they are connected as well, but they are separated, and this allows us to stand back. This allows us distance. This allows us a sense of self. This allows us not to simply live in the now. We can stand back and analyse things, both in the particular and in the general, in a way that other animals can't, because their brains are not these separate hemispheres. Their brains are just one interconnected mass which acts at any one time. Now, we know that the left side of the brain is associated with the right side of the brain, sorry, is associated with socialising, because when we socialise with people, we tend to use our left eye first, and it's the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body, the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. As I said, if you have damage to the left side of the brain, for example, severe damage, you can't speak, but you can understand. If you have damage to the right side of the brain, it's the opposite. You can speak, left damage means you can't speak. Right damage means that it's difficult to make sense of the whole. It's difficult to understand. And we know this from patients that have had severe damage to one or other side of the brain. So if you have a hyper left side of the brain, you're very, very narrow in focus, very, very autistic, very, very focused on the details, but they don't come together into any coherent hold, into any sense of meaning. With the right side of the brain, as with schizophrenics, there's lots of meaning. There's meaning everywhere. Everything has meaning, but there's no logical reason to it, because you can't deal with the specifics. And if you look at the nature of people who are schizophrenic, what they will do is they will find meaning in everything. They will say, oh well, look, this person is a writer for the Times newspaper, and his book was positively reviewed by Steven Pinker. And Steven Pinker is on the editorial board of the Evolutionary Psychological Science. And Evolutionary Psychological Science has published my research. And I used to be editor of Mankind Quarterly, and Mankind Quarterly has published this Saudi person's research, and this Saudi person has a friend who was involved in Al-Qaeda, and therefore Steven Pinker and this man at the Times are Al-Qaeda. It's one big conspiracy. Right, that's literally what that's the kind of workings of the schizophrenic mind. So, now what this also means is that if you are if you have damage to the left side of the brain, then you will tend to be optimistic. You will tend not to have an understanding of danger. If you have damage to the right side of the brain, however, as I said, then you will be more likely to be depressed. Because you will have these insights, you will have all these insights about things, but you won't be able to deal with these into a cohesive whole. Now, what's been suggested is that we have a shift in balance across evolution, which has, in a sense, made us more schizophrenic, moved us in a direction where there would be more schizophrenia. Because in evolution, we have been subject to group selection. Group selection, remember, is groups battling it out. Now, what helps you to win in terms of group selection is that you are more positively ethnocentric. What positive ethnocentrism is about is internal cooperation. So groups that are internally cooperative, that are high in empathy, basically, they will be more likely to survive. And so therefore you will get a selection pressure for being high in empathy. And being high in empathy is going to be associated ultimately with these schizotypal traits, and it's going to result in outliers who are basically schizophrenic. So as we select for empathy, we select for more outliers who are likely to be schizophrenic, and so gradually we become higher in empathy across time. And there's quite good evidence for that, this has been traced using art, that you see that art becomes more realistic across time. As societies become more advanced, art becomes more realistic, it becomes more focused on the face and the eyes, it becomes more focused on trying to represent people's feelings and things like that. And then you get a collapse of, let's say, the Roman Empire, you move back to a dark age, art becomes unrealistic. Part of this might be declining intelligence, but art becomes unrealistic. It becomes less focused on the face and what people's feelings are like and whatever. And then you get the Renaissance, where again, art starts to become focused on people's feelings and people and that sort of thing. And it would be very, very on realistic representation of people. And it would be very interesting to trace if modern art could be regarded as reflecting autism or reflecting schizophrenia. But anyway, this is what's been argued. Now, what we would expect to happen now as mutational load rises is you would get more and more people that were high, because there's no selection pressure. So under harsh Darwinian selection pressures, schizophrenia, or children that have schizophrenia, or might go on to have schizophrenia, would be selected out, because that would be correlated with having a high mutational load of the body, and they would die as children. People that had autism, again, would be selected out. It would be associated with high mutational load of the body. They would die as children. Under harsh group selection pressure, even if these people reached adulthood, the groups that had too many of them would be, I mean, there might be an advantage to having a tiny minority of them, because let's say autism is associated with thinking very logically and being able to cut out empathy, and therefore it's associated with aspects of genius which can come up with brilliant ideas and benefit the group. Because if you are autistic, then a new idea will always offend people, but low in empathy, you won't care about that. To get a new idea, you have to think outside the box, and people that are autistic will do that because they will just focus on, they don't care about social convention, plus high intelligence, and so you get genius, and so an optimum low level of autistics would be useful. Again, an optimum low level of schizophrenics could be useful in the sense that it would be a byproduct of very, very high empathy. But that, again, it would have to be kept to an optimum low because of the damage that schizophrenics reach. Now, what would happen, but anyway, under conditions of group selection, this would be kept in check, so that it would be low. If conditions of group selection collapse, which they have done, of course, because now we have peace and there's no war and fighting for resources and whatever, and everyone's rich because of the Industrial Revolution and the way in which it improved medicine and resources and whatever, then you would just get this divergence in all directions from what would be basically genetic, mental and physical health. And you would start to see this in the nature of how we think. So, let's look at postmodernism. What is the nature of postmodernism? First of all, I would argue postmodernism is basically a schizophrenic philosophy. The essence of postmodernism are the leftist foundations that it is inherently good that everyone be equal. Equality is good, we should promote equality, and harm is bad. The good of the group, the other, the right, these are left-wing moral foundations. They have been shown to be associated with being liberal and left-wing. The good of the group, sanctity, or authority are not there. Indeed, the postmodernism says our purpose is to question authority. All authorities, all structures and authorities should be questioned in favour of producing a world that is more equal. So that's the founding foundation of postmodernism. So that is very, very high empathy. That is very, very, that is basically borderline schizophrenia. So that's the foundation. Now, there's no logic in it. They question logic itself. As far as they're concerned, there's no such thing as truth. All of these things are all that truth is power. Those that assert there's such a thing as objective truth are doing so because they want to obtain power. Those that say that, you know, there's such a thing as race or whatever, well, that you should question why they're doing so. What are their motives? Is it really the case? Has it really been peer-reviewed? Ultimately, this is just a way of this is power. This is just a way of bringing about power over other people and destroying equality and destroying all that is good. And so, therefore, these people, they don't believe in objective truth. What they believe in is a giant conspiracy theory of very, very bad people that want to make the world less equal and want to empower themselves. And those people pretend there's such a thing as truth, and they indoctrinate the world with the idea that there's such a thing as truth. And there isn't. There's their truth. There's lots of truths. There's no such thing as objective truth. Objective truth is basically a conspiracy theory to ensure that certain bad people get power. And our purpose as postmodernists is therefore to get their truth and to undermine their truth, to question their truth, and in doing so to undermine that which gives them their power, so we can create a world that is more equal. So that's basically what they're saying. So this is extreme empathy, and it is schizophrenic. It conceives of a giant conspiracy theory that is behind events, including truth itself. There is of course no logic in postmodernism, because if you say there's no such thing as truth, then you can question even the claim that there's no such thing as truth, but that no logic would be consistent with high empathy and low autism. And in particular, if you look at the way that postmodern writing, you know, Jack Derrida or whatever, I tried to read this book when I was about 16. If you look at postmodern writing, it is just verbose nonsense. It's full of meaning and connections and whatever, but it doesn't actually make any sense whatsoever. In the mid 90s, they were going to give Jack Derrida an honorary degree or honorary doctorate from 92 from Cambridge. And a lot of people objected on the grounds that it doesn't make any sense at all. To call his thinking nihilist would be to flatter it by saying it was intelligible. These are absurd doctrines with dismaying implications. I'm quoting a number of Cambridge academics at the time. The French excel in fabricated terms of shifty meaning which make it impossible to detect what point philosophical speculation turns to gibberish. Deconstruction is a theory which appears to lend itself most friendly to babbling obfuscation. And of course, if you ever read any of this stuff, that is exactly true. It's just an attempt to seem profound when really it's doing nothing at all. So it's a manifestation of schizophrenia, basically. And it creates, therefore, a world of chaos. Now, the second schizophrenic philosophy that you can see manifesting now is, of course, conspiracy theories. These can be found on the right, because one of the correlates of schizophrenia is being extremely religious, because you perceive the existence of God everywhere. And you would expect this to come together with a more general conspiracy theory mindset, and you can see what this creates on the right. I'm sure I don't even need to go into it for you. The next thing you get is, of course, a rise in atheism. Atheism is the feeling that there is no God. And this is associated with autism. And this, of course, can lead to nihilism and a feeling that the world is pointless and you might as well not have children and general dysphoria and whatever, which is maladaptive. The next thing you can get is what we might call postmodern scholasticism. That is to say that people that are of midwit intelligence will tend, and this has been shown, people that have intelligence is weakly associated with taking whatever is the modern way of thinking, whatever is the dominant way of thinking, Absorbing that and convincing yourself through effortful control that you accept it, because doing so allows you to gain social status, so to be on the winning team. And people that are more intelligent are better able, they have better impulse control, they are better able to come up with superficially plausible reasons to believe whatever is the dominant ideology. So intelligent people will tend to do that. And once intelligent people do that, then, of course, they have to compete for status. And so they will take whatever is the dominant ideology, let's say postmodernism and being in favour of gays, and they will push it the next step further, such that things will always move to the left in a kind of arms race. Now, what you would expect an autistic person to do, a person that wasn't intelligent enough to question the whole system, but was intelligent enough to be able to absorb and understand the accepted system, would be to take this far too far, would be to accept, like scholasticism, you accept the dogmas of Christianity, and then from there you start looking into things like how many angels will fit in a pinhead or whatever. You take it as far as you can, and you could argue that's what you get these days. You get a kind of modern scholasticism where people go, okay, well, we accept that there should be equal rights, and we accept that there should be harm avoidance, equality. Let's take this as far as we possibly can. And what you end up with, therefore, is an insane philosophy, which states that there's, once you start question absolutely everything. What do you mean by intelligence? What do you mean by gender? What do you mean by childhood and adulthood? What do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? So that absolutely nothing makes sense whatsoever, and you push to a system essentially of nihilism, in which you can make sense of absolutely nothing. I mean, that is the logic. If you accept these dogmas, that is the logic of it, that absolutely nothing can make sense, because it is anti-autistic. Absolutely nothing can make sense. There can be no particular. And so the result of that is that you end up saying, well, there's no such thing as gender, there's no such thing as race, there's no such thing as anything, because that is the logic of accepting these dogmas. And that's what an autistic person would do once they accept the dogmas, is they would take them to the most extreme degree possible. So in the most extreme degree possible, of course, an autistic worldview would be to say that the individual is completely separate from everything else. The individual is not part of the whole. The individual is totally particular. And therefore, of course, the individual can decide what gender he or she is. The individual can decide what race he or she is. The individual can decide everything about himself, because there is nothing beyond the individual. And that is the nature of the autistic. The autistic ultimately is utterly selfish, really, is a complete separate individual, separate from everything, separate from the world, totally unique, totally peculiar, totally particular. And therefore, it's perfectly reasonable for that individual to say that he is not part of a matrix of meaning. Remember, that would be a sort of schizophrenic way of seeing things. He is completely and utterly separate. He has to have his own gender pronoun just for him. He decides who he is. I mean, basically, taken to its extreme, you have almost a kind of solipsism whereby the individual decides that only he exists. Because to say that anything else existed would be that's difficult to prove. How can you prove that? Only I exist. I perceive the world as me. So it seems to me that solipsism and just totally, that's the extreme sort of scholastic view that we get. And so what you end up with anyway is this coming apart, this total coming apart, this movement towards the extremes in terms of postmodernism on the one hand, in terms of extreme religiosity and conspiracy theories, and in terms of this pushing, this development of postmodernism in a direction where it simply becomes totally insane. And that's what you would expect to happen under these conditions. That's what you would expect to occur, and it has occurred. A total coming apart, a total movement towards the extremes, and a hollowing out of the middle in terms of worldview. And in future videos, I want to look at this in more detail at the genetic level. But I hope at least this helps us to make sense of how the changes in the nature of the brain can make sense of what's happening in terms of contemporary thought. I hope this has been of interest. And if it has, then feel free, please do subscribe. It really helps if you do that. Remember that I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time. Please support the channel, which you can do below. And you will see ways to do so below. And I will see you soon. And goodbye.